Greetings. Welcome to the Women in Fire radio show, Fire Camps for Girls. Thank you from Fire Engineering for allowing Women in Fire to be part of your radio series. I'm retired Battalion Chief Lisa Baker, and I'm the Southwestern Region Trustee for Women in Fire. Today, I have an excellent group of guests that are going to be discussing fire camps. I have Battalion Chief, soon-to-be Assistant Chief, Chris Larson, who's from the LA City Fire Department, who's been there 32 years. She's in charge of recruitment and youth programs. She's been involved in camps since 2001 with Camp Blaze and with the LA City Fire Camp since they started in 2006. I have Erica Insland, Sacramento City Fire for 32 years. She attended her first girls camp in 2017 in LA City Fire. She's the founding member of Sacramento Area Girls Fire Camps. And in 2021, she started the nonprofit Golden State Women in Fire Service. And then I have Katie Earhart, who's been as a captain in Alameda County Fire, who's been there 13 years. And she's one of the founding members of the NorCal Women in Fire Service. Thank you for my guests. I'm so happy to have you. And as I mentioned, we're going to talk about girls in fire camps. And so The programs are designed to provide the campers with realistic hands-on introduction to firefighting and EMS. The campers learn how to wear personal protective equipment, climb ladders, and pull fire hose. Fire camps allow the participants to interact with fire department members and ask questions and see what the life of a firefighter is like. So we're going to go ahead and start our program. And so, Katie, do you want to talk about what your program entails and how it helps with fire camps, or anyone who wants to go first?
I could talk about NorCal's program. You know, it really piggybacked off of Camp Blaze, which is a week-long process. And it was something that was brought to the Bay Area by Kim Larson, Diane Henry, and a couple other individuals, Jen Panko. And because Blaze is such a special place, but it is a week-long camp. And they wanted a two-day weekend where we joined all the other agencies that are local and get other agencies playing together, like Fremont, Santa Clara City, Oakland. And it was a really great mix of individuals and people, and it really brought our unions involved. And as you mentioned, it's a two-day camp, and they're, you know, using chainsaws and ventilation and learning about day in life and firefighter. And each camp, we kind of up the ante. Last camp we did was in Oakland, and we were actually able to do live fire behavior, where we build a huge dollhouse, just kind of like we do at Blaze, and show them, you know, this is how fire burns. This is what you're expected to do. And it really is a fantastic experience. And what we've really learned is not only for the girls, but with these fire camps, we're also able to mentor ourselves. Some of the mentorship within these camps, you know, I got to meet Chris at Camp Blaze, Chief Larson, and it was through her allowing me to teach at a lot of these fire camps that has now have me, I'm a cadre at my own department. And I'm one of the few live control live three burn instructors. So all these fire camps, these little pockets have created these bigger opportunities for not only these young women coming into the fire service, but the women currently in the fire service themselves and being mentored by these OGs like Eric Enslin and Chris. You get mentorship by these OGs, which is phenomenal. So NorCal is fantastic just because it is Bay Area located. And we get to play with these other agencies and see their towers. We've hosted at LP, Confire, Fremont, Santa Clara City, and I think Santa Clara County might be next. So we get to actually see all these different towers and meet all these different incredible people and mentor these girls in these different areas. So that's kind of NorCal's little shindig.
Can someone, Katie, you mentioned Camp Blaze that was a week long. Can someone like elaborate on what Camp Blaze really is? I mean, it seems like it might have been one of the first ones since it's been around, I believe, since 2001.
Chris is the OG on that.
I'm the OG here. Camp Blaze has been around since 1999, and it was started by a bunch of Seattle and San Francisco firefighters as their way of kind of giving back and encouraging leadership and skill building through fire, because that's who they were and that's who we continue to be. We continue to be firefighters. So we use, you know, fire to teach leadership and skills, and hopefully the return on investment is that these girls want to be firefighters in the future. But that's not necessarily the case. We just know that they go on to be successful in their chosen professions in life. But it's a week-long model, so it's a little different. It costs a lot more money to run, but we've been blessed to have North Bend's training center in Washington State, their state patrol training facility, be our training site since 2001, which is when I came on board. This past year, I was the IC of the camp. And it is all volunteer run. You know, we do use instructors from the state because there's part of the rules, but predominantly all of the instruction is done by women of various different departments from around the country. Girls, 24 of them selected from around the country to spend a long, long week learning skills that relate to fire. So we start them with face piece fit testing. And at the end of the week, they're doing live fires. They get to cut up cars. They get to climb an aerial ladder. They're using tools and equipment. They're doing CPR, obviously using breathing apparatus. So we make it fun, but it's also real life. This is what we do as firefighters. And as Katie said, you know, part of it is the mentorship of the girls, but part of it is the mentorship of the women that are involved. And for those women that are coming into Camp Blaze that are firefighters that are from smaller departments, for a lot of them, this is a shot in the arm that they don't normally get. This is the first time they've worked around, honestly, a bunch of badass women, because you're looking at 80 to 100 volunteers that are there. So everybody gets an opportunity to really shine and show their skills and develop their skills and then make friendships that, you know, go beyond just the week of camp.
Kim, you made a good point. I never really stopped to think about how the younger firefighters that go to volunteer to be with the campers have the opportunity to learn from the older firefighters. And I think that's like something that is very important. And you mentioned it's like a lot of the females don't work with other females in their departments. And so they get to see that as well as empower the younger girls that want to be firefighters.
Well, I mean, let's face it, with only 4% of the nation being firefighters, you know, there's times that you're just not going to have other women in your department. You may have, but they may not support you. So this is a chance to get involved in a sisterhood that's pretty powerful. And, you know, I know that Katie and I have talked about her road to promotion. You know, people write letters of support, letters of recommendation, not only for campers, but other staffers, you know, will be references for each other. So it goes a long way. And I know I can speak to it that, you know, one of our former Camp Blaze people is the fire chief of San Francisco, Janine Nicholson. And before my chief's interview, she called my fire chief and put in a good word for me. And, you know, that's a powerful thing. And it's not a thing that a lot of women have that are outside in their own departments, kind of isolated. So, you know, Camp Blaze model, you know, obviously LA does a camp. We started ours in 2016 or 17, and we shrunk it from the Camp Blaze model. But this model has proven, this two-day model has proven very successful and has spurred camps all up and down the West Coast, including our favorite girls from Alaska with their camp Northern Lights and Siren, which has got to be the best camp name ever.
I know. Yeah, you got that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you just enlightened me on a lot of things that I didn't realize what a girls camp. I mean, and I'm sure some people just see girls fire camp and you just think it's girls that you're trying to recruit into the fire service and get them interested in the fire service. And it's actually empowering women that are already in the fire service to, like you mentioned, the sisterhood and such that's lacking in a lot of departments and a lot of agencies and where there's only one female or such in an agency. So it's
both. We're trying to empower the young girls coming up, you know, to believe in themselves through, you know, fire curriculum. But yeah, it also lets us connect. Blaze also puts on, it's every 2 years, so it's a biannual event because it takes so much planning. But then on the off years, we have an event that's a weekend event for just fire service women. So we're mentoring each other and we come together and teach. It's just women teaching women. So it's totally unjudged, empowered, and it's an incredible weekend.
I can imagine. So Erica, you are the founding member of Golden State Fire.
Gung State Women in the Fire Service, yeah. and we put on the Hurro Girls Fire Camps. It was born out of Blaze and going to LA and seeing what they were doing and bringing it back and wanting to really put something together for the Sacramento region. And so we started the Sacramento area Girls Fire Camp. And that in the beginning, the draw was we wanted to bring all the women in the Sacramento area together. And COVID and other things, it kind of fell apart. And so I liked what NorCal had done, bringing everybody together. And so I kind of followed their lead, reached out. They were very gracious and helped me start my organization. And we have two models that we do. So we have the high school model, and that, which is the normal model that everybody seems to be doing, because we're empowering the younger women just to be more confident in themselves and hopefully go into the fire service at some point. But also, we have found that catching college age women, second career or coming out of college, they're trying to figure out what they want to do. And a lot of them have been told they can't be firefighters. Women can't be firefighters. That's still going around. So it's been very empowering for them to come out and be at a college age camp and realize that they can do it and they can pursue a career in the fire service.
So for
it's the same basic principle as the other ones with climbing the aerial, cutting up cars. It's just sort of on steroids because it's a bunch of adults instead of teenage girls.
So for the college age ones, do you actually go to the, how do you recruit for college age girls camp?
We put the flyers out on college campuses, and the hosting agency puts it out to their local colleges and fire programs and athletic departments around, and recruit them that way. Our first one was at UC Davis, and then our last one was down in Oakland at the Oakland Training Center with Oakland Fire and town firefighters. And it was a lot of junior college, community college women that came out, and then just women that were like, I want to see if I can do this because I keep thinking about this.
So, Chris, you could probably talk about this since you're in charge of recruitment. Do some cities use this, you think, as a recruitment tool as well as to empower young women?
Yeah. So, you know, LA City uses it as part of our progressive pathways with youth programs. So we specifically have our girls camp. We have a youth fire academy. That's an 8-week Saturday program. We have 5 magnet high schools, and then we have our cadet program. So all of the programs are designed to, you know, the cadet program being the top tier, all designed that those that are really interested pursue a path with the fire department. And unfortunately, just the way we hire, we don't get them all. But, you know, if the, you know, one of our fire chief says it, you know, you can't be it if you can't see it. So getting those girls and young adults, you know, students, kids interested and involved in these programs not only gives them an introduction to fire, but at the end of the day, if they choose not to, they're still going to be good citizens because they're going to have the mentorship of quality people within the fire service. And for those that are, you know, we offer them as many things as we can to help them get along their way. You know, our fire department offers them sponsorship to paramedic programs and fire academies if there are cadets. So it's something that, you know, is value added to them for those that are really, you know, engaged and really want this as a career. We've given them those opportunities for future success. So everybody does something different. And I think the interesting thing about the girls camp 2-day model is, you know, we're putting hundreds of girls through these camps on the West Coast. So unfortunately, it's going to take time for us to see what the fruits of these labors are. It may take 4, 5, maybe 7 years before we see this, because if we're looking at 14 to 18 year old girls or 19 year old girls, Just the time that it takes to get hired and the process they have to go through, it's just going to take time. But, you know, hopefully 5 to 10 years from now, we see that national number of 4% go up.
Yeah. So for your guys' camps, do you like keep in touch with the girls that show up? I mean, I'm sure when there's a camp, and I could be totally off base here, but you could kind of tell which ones are going to be more interested in it as the days go on. Do you stay in touch with the ones, or is there a way that you like follow them along their career path? Or once the camp's over, do they just kind of go and can they come back the following year if they're still interested, or how does that actually work?
For NorCal, they do have repeat people that come. And also, they do reach out to the instructors. A lot of the instructors will put their department email or whatnot. So I've had many campers at my station. And a couple of our campers from NorCal actually went up to Blaze this past year. And there are campers at Blaze as well. And they are intended to pursue the fire service. So we put it out there. We've started hosting, like, at the end of day two at NorCal, many little Q&A session where departments will come and junior colleges will come too. So we can rope them in more. So if they want to be in the loop, they can be. And the reality is, which has been awesome, is that some of the girls have been connected in. And now with NorCal's camp, to be a camper, yes, you have to be in high school, but we allow like crew leader assists, which are girls that are in junior college or a little bit older, to be tied with a crew. They're with another crew, or they're with crew leaders who are firefighters, but they're that person that isn't a safety. And they're just another adult, but typically they're in junior college. They're trying to pursue the fire service, or they just have a real interest in it. And I think if I talk to Kim, I think six of them have been hired on departments. We've had Jess and a bunch of other people. So we're capturing multiple different levels of individuals. And it is huge with that personal connection. If you keep that, that's what they're looking for, is that personal connection and mentorship of how do I do this? This is such a pathway that's so different than any other type of career. Do I just walk into some random fire station? And you know, and I had that privilege. I am a firefighter's kid. I used to just walk from the fire station. I thought that was normal. But you really look at it, is it really that common for young women to walk into fire stations and have that opportunity? And I still don't see that. I don't see them getting as accepted as much as men walking in. So we create that little bit of a, hey, the door's open, come sit down, let's have a cup of coffee, and let's talk about what it looks like to be in the fire service.
I think it's a little bit different with Blaze because the age requirement's a little bit higher. It's 16 to 19. But yeah. You also have to remember when you're dealing with 14 to 18 year olds, like we do with most of the girls' camp models, except for Erica's, you got to be careful of the relationship that you have with a minor. All of that stuff has to be really professional and above board, and, you know, done through the lens of a parent. We try to engage our youth with our social media. So a lot of times we keep in contact with some of the kids from Blaze, the girls from Blaze, through our Camp Blaze social media. And then, you know, all the girls' camps have their own social media, or it's run through, like we have ours through joinlafd.org. So, I mean, there's ways to follow the social media. It's really hard to track the kids because, you know, it's data is just hard to get. And sometimes you lose touch with these girls. But for those that are engaged, that's what we offer them. What Katie's saying is, come on, let's help you walk through this, because it can be difficult to navigate. You know, every department has different hiring requirements, and, you know, to win at this game of getting a job as a firefighter, you have to know the rules, and it's just different from a regular corporate job.
So Erica, when you talked about the two college camps that you just had, one at UC Davis and the one they just recently held in Oakland, was it high turnout, or what was the turnout? Was it more or less than you would expect, or more or less than with the younger?
It's less than with the younger, and it's less than I would have expected and had signed up. Both of them have been about 50% of who have signed up. And it's something that we're tracking to see if it, when you're in a high school camp, your parents are dropping you off, so you're kind of forced to be there because you have that adult supervision. This is my assumptions. And when you're a young adult in charge of yourself, you might just roll over and go, I just don't really want to do that this weekend. Yeah. And so you have no accountability. The ladies that show up definitely want to be there, worked hard, learned a lot, and, you know, have come out the better for it. As both Katie and Chris mentioned, I've had gals from camp come to my firehouse and, you know, we talk about things, and sometimes we'll even go out and pull some hose and throw some ladders and just work on some techniques, because they're having just that little bump of trying to throw the 24 by themselves and not knowing a technique and only being able to try to throw it up with the strength, and how do I use my legs instead of my upper body, and just going through some of that stuff a little bit more technically. And that's usually the questions I get asked, is how do you throw a 24? Because I'm short. So it's things that we work on. And also after the college camps, we have a recruitment fair and a what's next. So we invite the local departments to come in and, you know, let the campers know what's next to get in with their specific departments. What are their requirements? What do they need to focus on? Because as Chris mentioned, there's many different requirements for many different departments.
So we're talking about the girls' fire camps. So has any boys put in for the camps? And if so,
we've had boys.
Chris has had boys.
We've had boys. Orange County's had boys. You know, there was a lawsuit probably about 4 years ago in San Diego, where just a guy, just to do it because that's what he does, sued San Diego. And basically, it's just all are welcome, you know, and the gentleman, well, I should say this, the boy that showed up, his dad was on the job, and it kind of was a power play a little bit, I think. He didn't have all the proper paperwork signed, but he was 18. So once they just got approval from his parents, like they know where he was, you know, he was allowed to participate. What was very interesting was, you know, these girls are in the group. They bond in that group. That's their group. And at lunch, he went and tried to sit by himself. And the girls were like, hey, we're sitting over here. And he's like, no, I'm going to go sit over there. So they all picked up their stuff and sat with him because they got the idea of the group. And this, we're all together and we're unified. So I think that message played really well to him. This boy's dad came the second day and did something really stupid and got chewed out a little bit. But he walked around and said, oh my gosh, you guys are doing real stuff. Like, yeah, we have a roof prop that we're cutting. Yes, we're using rotary saws. Yes, they're flowing water. Yes, they're climbing an aerial. So, you know, I think what the dad thought kind of backfired. But the boys are welcome. It does change the dynamic. This was one at ours, Orange County. It became a game, and it changed the dynamic of the thought process between the boys and the girls. When it's majority girls, they're there, they're helping each other. It became a game at Orange County, and it was actually really kind of disheartening, to be honest with you, because the girls would, it turned into the flirty thing, turned into, oh, look at me. You know, the boys were puffing the chest, and it was kind of sad. But at the other camps, there's just none of that. The collaboration and the working together and the camaraderie is just, it's amazing to watch. You don't think much will happen in 2 days. It's amazing how much they get out of 2 days.
I'm sure just being there, they not only learn firefighting, but they probably learn a lot of leadership techniques and skills as well, just from what you just said.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, Erica, when you did the I know that Oakland did a college age one, and they did one other camp right, 2 weekends before that. Was that a college age camp?
That was NorCal, and that was a high school age camp. Okay. So they did back-to-back camps with both mine and Katie's organizations.
So now, are you seeing more people from, let's say, when you started these camps that are now interested than when they first started? That are putting in, is it a process that, so how does someone go about getting in the camp? Is there an application process, or does everybody that applies get in, or how does that work?
It's different for every camp. Like Golden State's camp, and I'm going to speak to NorCal, but correct me if I'm wrong, Katie. It's just an application. You just put in your name and you're in.
Well, we have a wait list typically for ours. Yeah.
High schools seem to have wait lists, and we turn ours off after so many with a wait list of like five.
Okay. And what's the the rate that don't show up? Is there a rate of people that just don't show up that sign up and then maybe get cold feet or just decide before they show up, or maybe the first day leave and don't come back the second day? Does that happen?
For the college age camps, it seems to be a 50% loss. We had 40 people signed up in a wait list, and we had 20 people show up for this last camp. And we capped it off at that small of a number because we knew we were going to get more hands-on and we wanted to get more in depth with the college age women. With the high school camps I've been involved with, and we're going to be putting one on for Consumnes Fire District in April, it'll probably be capped off at 60 because it's more just giving them a chance and an opportunity to touch the tools and have that experience. And then I'll let Chris speak more to Blaze, but it's a very involved application process. Have to write an essay. The essays are read by third-party people, not by the board, and are selected in that respect.
Katie, what did you guys cap NorCal? Do you guys cap it at 50?
We cap it at 50, and then we have a wait list. And this past camp, I think only we had one person not show up to the second day, too. Mm-hmm. I think we had almost 50 campers. And then when COVID, we were the only camp that was able to host during COVID. We figured out how to do it. And we did a day each instead of doing a two-day camp. We had one day and we did 25 and 25. So the girls were in smaller groups. So we still were able to reach 50 campers. It's capped at 50. Our biggest no-show, I think, was only like 10, and that I can't speak to Contra Costa County because I wasn't at that one, but about 50, yeah. Because then that's a 2-to-1 ratio with about 100 volunteers.
Wow. Yeah, it's the sweet spot, honestly, is 50 to 60. I know we jammed 90 into one of ours, and it was a disaster. And I refused to allow them to do it. So I put 50 in this one and had a wait list. And, you know, you're going to get maybe a 10 to 20% no-show rate. It's L.A., so you know, it is what it is. Most people that come the first day will come back the second day. They just do. We had one girl that just had an epic meltdown and didn't come the second day of this camp that we just had in October, but that's usually the exception, not the rule.
So we briefly talked about this. So when you guys have the camps and then you break them up into like squads or groups and they go through different scenarios. So can you guys talk about the scenarios or the skill sets that you actually go through with the campers and how it's set up?
Yeah, so each camp has a little different vibe, but typically you have a hose station and then a saw cutting station, tools and extrication, ladder climbs, extinguishment, and try to think. And then we CPR is a huge one. And this year we tied in other jobs that are just as cool as firefighter, but still in the fire service. So we're able to bring out like our dispatchers and state fire and things like that. So there's typically a couple rotating, but you want to hit the bread and butter, ladders, hose, tools, saw cutting, things like that. We did a small tool station that was really big this year that we'll bring back next year. That went really well. So getting the girls used to using a skill saw, using a drill, using a level. What does a level do? What is a speed square? You know, like, so every camp you have to adjust a little bit to the tower and to what you can work with as well. Oakland was really gracious and let us do live fire with the girls, where they weren't involved in live fire, but we were able to put on a demonstration for them, where some camps you have to be, they might have a really cool maze prop. And so you'll utilize that. And so it is kind of cool. You kind of go to each different tower and kind of see what they have. And yeah, you'll have your primary stations, but it is awesome as someone who is a part of our training cadre for our department to go to different towers and just see the amount of props or different avenues you can do. Cause these girls are fearless. They're absolutely fearless. And the women that are putting it on, they want to learn as well. And it is so fantastic to see that collaboration between departments and the shared knowledge and just that passion that runs kind of through.
I think that's important, what you just said, the shared knowledge and the different departments with the females coming together for a common goal, which is to empower the women and get them interested in a career as a fire department, in the fire department, or just leadership, teaching them leadership skills. And that's huge that the females come together to do that, in my opinion.
And you know, what the interesting thing is, you know, you got women from all different departments at the 2-day camps and Camp Blaze, and at least at Camp Blaze, you're a crew leader, you're your position. There's no rank associated with it. And that's pretty much the way it runs at all the camps. I mean, you can clearly see what somebody's rank is when they put a helmet on, obviously, but when they're instructing a station, they're an instructor. And so that's another unique thing, is we kind of take rank and ego out of it. It's all about how are we helping the kids and then mentoring each other. And I got to say, when I put on my white helmet, it's actually a deterrent, because then everybody's like, oh, hi, chief. Like, no. At this camp, my name is Chris. And, you know, and that's, you know, that I think that also helps, because, you know, for departments that are very, you know, rank oriented, mine specifically, you know, it takes some of the edge off. And they realize that, you know, we're all there to collaborate and we're all there for a common goal. So that's important.
And to tie in with what Chris said, which is so important, when Kim's the president of NorCal Women in the Fire Service, she was the IC of the first camp, and she was a firefighter at the time. She had no rank. She had nothing. And in our department, she actually didn't even have that much seniority. And it was people like Chris who threw their weight and their name behind her. And now she's a captain, and she is still running these camps. And I mean, we get a list long of people who want to host these camps. And it's because of Chris loaning her power, her strength, her white helmet, whatever it is. And those women pushing that forward, because like we said, like it's about these high schoolers, but Chris is going to retire in the next couple of years, hopefully. So she can enjoy her life. Yeah. But and it's our responsibility to help keep pushing it forward. And we can't do that without experience. And that honestly, like just having that, I don't know, strength, Chris. What do you loan us? Your strength, your confidence, your acts?
Yeah, just okay. Like, I'm here to help.
Yeah.
You know, I show up and I'll do sounding whatever board. You want. But I mean, it's a sounding board, but it's institutional knowledge, you know, and it's the spirit of collaboration, you know, because like you said, at some point in time, I'm going to retire. And, you know, I'm sure somebody's going to call me up and go, hey, can you work this girls' camp? You're retired. You don't have anything else to do. And, you know, I'm not going to do that. But I mean, you know, it's important that, you know, there's gaps in the fire service as far as like women that are hired. I mean, my department didn't hire anybody from 2008 to 2013. So there's a gap of zero women during that time period. So now I'm, you know, within my own organization, trying to engage the younger women and encourage them to promote and do all that kind of stuff. So I just do it differently at wherever I am. But I mean, I think it's important when NorCal started, you know, they took a playbook from LA and they made it their own. And we've shared that with whoever's wanted it. But then to go and also support them, I've taken three trips to the Bay Area this year. I don't know, to do camps. And they're like, what do you want? Kim will say, where do you want to work? I'm like, put me where you need me, you know? And then it's like one camp I'm doing this, another camp I'm doing that. And I don't care. I mean, I'm just there to have fun. And so, you know, giving those people a little weight when they say, hey, I got this chief from LA that's coming to help us out. And then, you know, these fire chiefs see that come, because they always do, because it's like, you know, it's a great PR thing for them. But then to see me walking around, helping out, rolling hose, moving a ladder, doing whatever, they're kind of like, maybe I'm not a normal chief. I don't know. I might get kicked out of the union for this. But it's all in the spirit of helping. And I think it does help when, you know, you do have, you know, other people from large organizations coming and helping out, because it makes a big difference to those departments. And I mean, Kim's done a phenomenal job running NorCal. You know, organizations, other fire departments are banging the door to get them to come and do their stuff. So, you know, what we're doing is making a difference. And, you know, now with you look at all the diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, this is that thing that if a fire chief really believes in it, can have a difference in their organization. And, you know, for those that it's just a rubber stamp, just so that the fire chief can check off that they did it. It's usually not as successful.
Yeah. And to tie into that, Chris, and I think that's something with NorCal that Kim and the board is doing a really good job of, is they're always upping the ante. And since they are having other departments come and ask, hey, listen, we want you to host, they're now interviewing the department saying, hey, listen, what are you doing to make women on your department feel included? Do you have women's restrooms? Do you have a maternity policy? And they actually have chiefs that come in and they pretty much interview them to say, hey, listen, we want to host here, but we're not going to host in an area where it is a rubber stamp. We want this to actually make an impact. And if your department's not there on your social media platforms, in your own fire stations, are you still using terminology that's outdated and not inclusive? Then why would we host here? Like, that's bad for us as well. That's, you know, so I think that's something with NorCal that I've seen really a lot of progression of, like, yeah, we have all this buy-in. Okay, how can we use that for the betterment of the women in that current organization? Because you can host all the girls' camps you want in the world at any department. But if you do not have a culture of inclusivity in making sure that your members, all your members, feel welcome and then they have a seat at the table, why are we going to bring you all these new people? So I really hope that organizations really take a hard look of, yeah, we're trying to hire all these, this diverse group, but are we making a welcoming environment where they want to come here, work here? Because it doesn't matter how many diverse people you hire, if they don't feel included, they're not going to want to do anything with the department. They're going to go to a different department and all these lateral hires, actually, which some people are seeing. Oakland had a huge lot, had a bunch of people jump ship from their departments, you know? So, but I do see NorCal really upping the ante with that one, which is awesome.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So, Erica, so with your camp, and anyone can answer, so you guys get people that reach out to you and want you to help host the camps? Is that how I understood, Katie, that?
For NorCal, yeah, they've had people that reach out. They usually put their feelers out, but they've gone to like the Cal Chiefs meetings or whatnot, and Kim or Jen Panko or Diane Henry usually get like, hey, we'd really like you to host the camp. Santa Clara's County was the last one. So typically someone will approach them, and we've had multiple camps, you know, multiple people approach, and sometimes it's just the timing doesn't work out. It really doesn't. You know, we've really learned fire season is like an off. We can't do fire season because we're all gone. Everyone's gone. Everyone's mandoed. Yeah. But yeah, they've had, or even junior colleges are now starting to approach and ask, hey, can we host an event? It doesn't have to look exactly like that, but can you come in and help us run an event? Because it's also, you can expand girls' camps as in like just recruitment fairs in general. The women who run these have run these mini evolutions time and time again, and it's so well run by these women that outside entities are like, why would we want to reinvent the wheel? Why not bring in people who know what needs to happen, who know logistically what, how much wood needs to get bought, what needs to happen with lunches, insurance as well. You have to carry your own insurance policies. So those are all little things that when people say, well, we'll host a camp. Okay. Well, like Blaze is so fortunate. Here's the binder. Okay. Step one, get insurance for the camp. How do you do that? Like, that's a huge thing unless you have some kind of backing, or else the department's willing to pick up that liability, which a lot of single organizations aren't. So NorCal, yes, they've had people approach them. I know that. I can't speak for other camps. I know Blaze, NorCal really panned off Blaze a lot. So that's who they got their help from for that.
And Golden State, we're starting out, but we've been having some really great discussions. The college model seems to really be taking off for us. We're in talks with some other departments. Kind of like NorCal, we found 2 to 3 a year, and I think we're defaulting to 2 a year because there are so many now, and supporting other camps in the areas, people get kind of burnt out on spending every weekend doing girls camp. Even as amazing as it is, it's still a lot of work. We're making inroads into the Sacramento area, and we play off of NorCal a lot, and go down and help them with their camps, and they in turn help us with our camps, and it's just a really great collaboration.
So, Erica, you just recently taught a class with the Women in Fire Conference in Orlando
Orlando
in September. And well, I think it was entitled How to Start a Fire Camp, if I'm correct.
It was So You Want to Start a Girls Camp, a Girls Fire Camp. I have been so empowered in my own journey through the fire service by camp life, the camaraderie at camp, the being supported by fellow campers and instructors, that I really wanted to share that with everybody else. That, you know, the networking part of it was huge. Blaze had written, the original board of directors from Blaze had written a kind of like a how-to manual. If you wanted to start a girls camp, this is how to do it. So I updated that manual and kind of streamlined it as much as possible. It's still like really thick. But I tried to cover more of any type of camp you wanted to do rather than just focus it on Camp Blaze. But I took Camp Blaze's original workbook that they did and expanded on it and made it, you know, updated it for 20 years later. And put on a class at Women in Fire with Austin Stutzman, who is the president of Blaze. And just kind of like, if this is what you want to do, this is how you do it. It, like Katie was talking about, you know, you have to get insurance, you have to get buy-in, you're going to need money. Where are you going to get your money from? Is the department going to pay for it? Or are you going to need to do fundraising? How are you going to do that fundraising? If you're starting a camp from scratch, are you going to start, you know, think about your logo. How's it going to relate? What kind of social media are you going to push out? What can you do? What can't you do? You know, yeah, there's a lot of steps you have to think through that when I was starting Golden State, I had no idea what I was doing. And I didn't want anybody else to feel as lost as I did. So if I could give them a bit of a roadmap, then, you know, they'd be starting out ahead of where I did. I was very lucky enough, like I've said, to be able to play off of NorCal and talk to Kim and talk to Ash, who's their secretary, a lot of how did you guys do this? How did you guys do this? How did this work for you guys? So, and then, you know, being part of a bunch of LA camps and just getting the experience down there repeatedly and knowing what, for me, I saw working and empowering the women was what I wanted to carry on into the camps that Golden State puts on.
So are all the camps, are they all nonprofits, or how you've taught, you have mentioned funding a couple of times. So
mine's a nonprofit. NorCal's is a nonprofit. From what I understand, LA, they get their money from either the city or no,
the city sponsors it. The city sponsors it. It's all on the fire department. I spend a lot of money on V hours paying people to work within my own organization. And then, you know, but we were very lucky when we started it. The chief that sat in my seat before me, Chief Alicia Welch, she worked at the mayor's office, the mayor's wife, and got a donation that basically funded a bunch of equipment, chainsaws, rotary saws, dowels, rebar, all that kind of stuff. The department provided PPE. But, you know, every camp you're going through, ear pro, eye pro, all that kind of stuff. So you do have to figure out a budget. And usually food is the biggest cost. And, you know, I know NorCal's gotten their equipment, and sometimes you just get it from other departments. We just gave Culver City, who's doing their girls camp, they needed PPE. And when the, you know, email came from the fire chief, get this, she had it within a couple of days, and it's hers to keep, you know, because we have it to give. So we're not a nonprofit. So we just use the city. One of the things I will say that's really, really, really important and vital that we don't think about because we're firefighters, but having admin people that know what to do is like banana shorts necessary. And so, you know, the admin side of it, if you don't have the people that are skilled in that, can make some of the logistics stuff for your camp not run right, especially, well, Blaze is on a whole different level because we're talking about liability waivers and, you know, physical exams. And you're talking about the volunteer staff and the campers and all that kind of stuff. So I can say that the admin for Camp Blaze, which was at the end of July, beginning of August, started in March and was doing something every single day admin wise for that camp, up until we left for camp. So having a good admin, because one of the things fire chiefs like are statistics and a one pager that shows who showed up, where they were from. We just did Sacramento, was up at Sacramento camp, and you know, the data they wanted was which council district the girls were from. So, you know, then you got to reverse engineer, you know, zip codes of all the girls and all that kind of stuff. So at some point, you know, that stuff becomes important to fire chiefs, especially when they're trying to sell that program and justify it.
So you guys talked about fire chiefs that'll show up to the camps and such and the buy-in, or if they're just looking to check a box. What's the relationship with the labor unions? Good, bad, and
I think it just depends. I know when Kim started NorCal, our local 55 was really supportive, and that had a lot to do with Kim's company officer just was out of the union, and he is so uber supportive. And so is my company officer as well. And it takes those strong people within that union and strong male counterparts who are going to support this. You know, it, as many women as you have to have those supportive other parts as the men and the labor union. So local 55 always donates. And they're always supportive of it. They offer, you know, extra hands. My captain came down and helped out, and so did Kim's captain, especially at the first couple. So we've had, I feel like NorCal's had a mix for the most part, but it's mostly been positive. And along with not only using locals, cook and things like that, you can also CalJAC money too, making sure you get funding from the departments through CalJAC, making sure you get demotions through the union. It also shows you have some buy-in. You're putting some money into this. It's not just, yeah, we'll loan you the union barbecue and you can barbecue. No, you need to be here. You need to support this. Like, this is something that's huge and it's generational. You need to have that buy-in, or else what's the point? You know, then we get all these great people coming in with a union who's not going to support them. So I kind of really puts, anytime money is involved, it kind of puts people's priorities in check, you know, how much are you going to give? And I know with Alameda County, Kim's always got a really good donation because they're like, yeah, this is worth, you have shown. And like Chris is saying, our admin is squared away. Dawn helps out a lot with our admin and making sure that that looks all nice and tight with Kim and submits it. And it's a program that, as we've talked throughout this program, it's supporting these young women coming through, but it's also helping these other women within the organization get teaching time, get different spots times, and developing their own leaders within the organization. So they're stronger. Kim started this when she was a firefighter and I was an engineer, and now we're both company officers. And so much of that is because we grew so much under Chris and Erica and all these other senior women who've taken time to pour into us, you know, Jen Panko, all these senior women who have reached out. So it's really important for the unions and the departments to support it. Cause like I said, you put your money where your mouth is, you say it's important, then give us a check.
Well, I think we don't get a whole lot of union support, but one of the things that's been interesting over the last couple of years is, and especially this camp that we had last in October, we had a couple guys whose daughters were in the camp and they actually volunteered. And it was a light bulb moment for them. They're like, they came up to one of the other chiefs that was working and said, I want to do the next one. They got it. One of the firefighters, medics that was working, whose daughter was there, his daughter had never asked him a question about work. And on the ride home Saturday, she was asking him all kinds of questions. So how special is it now that he and his daughter have a bond that they never had before? So you're also making inroads that way, and you're getting buy-in from the rank and file. They may pay poo-poo it, but at the end of the day, when they have a daughter that goes through and is changed by what happens at camp, it changes their mindset. And I have one captain who said, anybody that needs to know, I'll advocate till the end of the day. So that's different. And that is also how you make change about the perception of what camp is. And, you know, you always get that, why don't you run a boys camp? I will tell you, that everybody that said that to me, I said, hey, What do you need to know? I'll give you the playbook. And then it's up to you. And then when you talk about, hey, you know, I go to these camps and they're for fun and for free. I'm not getting paid to do it. I'm taking my own time off and I'm doing that. And this is what you got to do to secure, you know, funding and equipment and all that kind of stuff. I've yet to have a male start their own camp. So, you know, women can get criticized for doing it, but at the end of the day, we've stepped up and actually done the incredibly hard work to make these programs accessible. And it's not like we're trying to X the guys out. They just haven't really actually stepped up and had the dedication to do it. So, you know, if they want it, I will certainly give them the playbook and they can go forth and make boys camps.
I think one of the things too to point out is that we don't exclude men from helping out. They are absolutely invited and encouraged to come and assist us. They're just not frontline instructors. They get to take a backseat role and be the support services or the logistics or something kind of behind the scenes. But we absolutely encourage any man who wants to come to participate in camp on an instructor level that they can be a volunteer, but they can't be a lead instructor.
That was going to be my question. Yeah.
And just tying to Erica's, you know, my company officer came out for the first one and he was out there day two. And he said it was probably one of the best experiences he's had. He was said it was the most well-run fire department event he's been to. And he's like, you know, for the first time I feel what you probably feel on a majority of time where you come in and everyone's just staring at you and they're seeing what you're going to do and what you're going to say. And he's like, it's a little bit unnerving. Like after a while, everyone, you know, accepted me and all the things, and I worked hard, but he's like, that was the first time I ever that was the first time I had the opportunity to feel what you feel when you come into a fire station that's all men. And that's important for men to feel like that, to see how they come off. Like that's huge. Cause I think sometimes men don't realize they create that environment, and that's not the intent of the women, but they're looking, they're seeing if this guy's what's he going to do? You know, and fortunately I work for the 1% captain. He's just phenomenal. He's great captain, Matt. And he took it in stride and he worked his butt off all day. And he says the best event he's ever been to, most well run. He's like, I've never seen so many supportive people on a fire ground in my entire career. And he is 16, 17 years in. He's a great company officer. So
when the girls are at the camp and like, let's say one of them might be struggling a little bit, do you see the camaraderie with the other girls wanting to help right away? Or like give
suggestions?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Or cheering each other on, especially, you know, in the aerial climb, a lot of people are afraid of heights, and just the camaraderie that, you know, is at the bottom of that ladder, cheering that person on that's climbing is so incredible and so heartening. And it's just all positive and all love. Yeah. And we haven't had one person back down yet.
So you mentioned, Erica, when you were going to start the camp and such. So after the class at Women in Fire, has anyone reached out to you wanting to start a camp or?
I've had people reach out for the material. Mm-hmm. And I've had a couple of email conversations with a few people who want to start their own camp. Before this, I had done a podcast on camps, and I got a lot of people reaching out through that also on how do you start this? How did you do that? How, which is another thing that led to the handbook, just so there was a roadmap. More easily dispersible than just me saying, hey, this is how I did it. It's more of a conglomeration of a bunch of people's ideas.
And people that reach out through Camp Blaze, you know, we answer their emails and hopefully guide them in the right direction as well. I mean, you're seeing camps all over. I mean, the West Coast has a lot, but all over the United States. I just reached out to somebody from Georgia. The two-day model is great. You know, we have some of our Blaze people that are in Texas. They're trying to get theirs up and running. So it's popular. And it's necessary to give, you know, these young girls a positive role model. So much of social media is just negative and hateful. And this is just a positive experience for 2 days. You get to be a kid. And at the end of the day, hey, listen, if you're cutting with a chainsaw and you're climbing a fire department air ladder, you're doing stuff that 90% of the country and the world doesn't ever get to do. And so to the end of your dying days, you get to say, When I was X, I got to climb a fire department aerial ladder. So it's just a cool story, if nothing else, right?
No, it really is. And Chris, you just made a good point that they get to see role models and such. I mean, I had no idea of how powerful, after listening to the three of you, how powerful these camps could be for the young women. And more importantly, for the women that are already in the fire service. I think, Katie, you've mentioned numerous times how you went and you've been mentored by Erica and Chris, and the knowledge and experience that you gain just from them. And I never really thought of that personally, that would occur. I just, thought you were there trying to recruit women into the fire service and giving them some leadership tools and such to become firefighters. And when you think about it, I mean, you look on social media and stuff and you see pictures, you see where firefighters are going up and down the state. Like Erica's gone to LA, Katie, you've gone to LA, both have gone to Washington. Chris, like you mentioned, you were in the Bay Area three times. The networking and such, and you're doing it because you want to do it. You want to empower the females, and you want to empower the younger females firefighters that are in the departments now, because like you mentioned, they're not getting that in some of their departments. So I mean, the camps, I think, like, If anyone could take away from anything of this, is it's not just for the girls, it's for the women also that are in your departments that are like creating these bonds and these helping these young females and such.
Absolutely. And it's for all these organizations that say they're pro women to host camps and to make it women friendly. It's also for these organizations to step up and show that, it's not just we're going to say we're going to hire diversity or be a part, empowering others. It's about showing it as well. So I think it hits a lot of marks if you really dig into it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, since when you think about it, we respond to all different parts of the community, and having a diverse fire department to be able to respond to those diverse areas of your city just makes your fire department that much stronger. Because diversity, people think of diversity as just gender. It's also diversity brings different ideas, different perspectives and such. One quick more question. So has mayors or city council members ever shown up to any of these camps? Like if it's
absolutely.
Oh, heck yeah.
My
mayor has been to every single one. As a matter of fact, we did a DEI presser today and he talked about girls camp. So as a matter of fact, when we had our girls camp in October, fire chief got the girls. He's like, okay, I want everybody to get down and give me five. And there was the mayor doing push-ups with the fire chief. So, followed her example, not the other way around. So, electeds like it. We always invite electeds to come and see camp, especially if they're spending the money. So for my department, I had a council member give me an extra $20,000 in my budget to buy food and to buy consumable materials. So it's important to have those members come and see what's going on, because they have a vested interest in it. These people might be working for them one day, responding to their house. And, it's a good way for them to see that also that the fire department adds value, that they're out there in the community in different ways, not just recruitment events, not just safety fairs, but they're out there really engaging the youth in a different way. And it pays dividends down the road. Because like I said, not all these kids that go through these fire camps are going to be firefighters, but at the end of the day, they're going to be better citizens for it.
Yeah. So we're just about out of time. So I just want to say I have the most respect for the three of you, for all you're doing in the fire service, not only for the younger generation, but for females that are currently in the fire service. I respect the three of you, all of you. And again, Chris, congratulations on your promotion next week.
Yeah, Chris.
So thanks to each of the guests for being a part of the radio show. Thanks to Fire Engineering again. And thank you to all the listeners and members of Women in Fire. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram, and to check out our website, which is womeninfire.org.